Okay, let's get started.
Wait, just a minute, partner.
No.
Guess again, freak boy.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
AudioTU.com. Another fresh picked pod from AudioTU.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 41 of Shutters Inc. Hopefully by now you know who I am. I'm Bruce Williams from AudioTU.com, and if you don't know who he is by now, he's Shelton Muller, professional photographer based in Melbourne. And I've been a little bit remiss. I should have said before now, because we've been doing this for a year now, if you're a new listener and you've just joined us, welcome aboard. And basically what Shutters Inc. is about is a week-by-week, not really a tutorial, but Shelton espouses his photographic wisdom for the benefit of you, the listener. So this is Shutters Inc. if you're new to it, and if you're a regular, then you already know what we're about. How are you, Shelton?
I'm really well, Bruce. It's good point you make there. We really should catch up with our new listeners, you know, from time to time, and we like to welcome you.
Absolutely. We're constantly getting emails saying, oh, you know, I've just discovered the podcast, and I thought, well, you know, we never really say g'day to the new people.
Yep. Welcome to all the new people, and of course remember that you have 40, is it, podcasts to download? To catch up with us. So
prior to this one,
busy. You'll be busy on the train to work or wherever it is that you listen to your iPod for the next little while. But we've had a lot to say in times past, and of course photography is one of those things where there's still a lot more to say.
Absolutely. And what are we going to be saying this week?
Well, this podcast is thanks to an email I received, actually not from one of our listeners, but to someone who I've known for a little while, who has just got a new gig with one of Australia's magazines, Australian Photography. His name is Prashputita Greco, and he does a regular sort of question and answer segment in Australian Photography magazine, which I saw, and I emailed him, and I said, hey, you know, congratulations for the gig. And he reminded me of, in his email, that of something that I wrote a long time ago, actually, in the year 2000, in a magazine I used to do called Photomaster, which was something he benefited from, and it was my formula for dynamic images. So we're going to be talking probably a lot more about this formula in detail over the next few podcasts, and if I get, of course, questions from listeners. So we're going to talk about that formula today. It's my formula. It works for me, and I hope it works for you. So, you know, by all means, let me know if you've got something to add to that formula or you disagree with it the way it, you know, adds up at the end. But this is, you know, the formula that I came up with several years ago that I apply pretty well every time I'm out shooting. Before we do that, though, I have a question from Richard, Richard Bowen, that I'd just like to answer. Richard, you asked the question about the depth of field preview in your camera, I really appreciate everybody who sent in images showing me that they did get out and test their depth of field. Nobody actually got out with different lenses and tried them at different apertures and worked out their perspectives and stuff like that, but it was a big job. So I appreciate the effort you all put in.
Oh, one thing before you go any further, Shelton. I did get an email from somebody who sent me a link for a depth of field calculator, which is on the net. So I will put that link on the Shutters Inc. page for anyone that wants to go and check that out. Sorry, mate, as you were.
Yep. Richard, the depth of field preview button on your camera is used to stop down the current aperture setting so that you get an idea when you're looking through the viewfinder of what your depth of field is going to be. Because you have to remember that when you look through your viewfinder, the lens is set at its widest, its most open setting, its widest aperture, so that you get the brightest viewfinder. When you take the photograph, the aperture closes down during the exposure when the mirror comes up, so you can't see what's happening anyway. The depth of field preview button, actually, if you press that, it manually closes down the aperture so that while you're looking through the viewfinder, it shows you the depth of field that you'll have. But you remember, of course, that you're suddenly shutting down your aperture and, you know, reducing the amount of light that's coming through your viewfinder. So it could get a little dark in there. I very rarely use my depth of field preview button, to be quite honest with you. However, my style of photography usually means that I'm either at one end of the scale or the other. You know, I'm either very little depth of field or I just want heaps of it. Yeah. So I very rarely use it. If you find a use for it, by all means. Some photographers can't live without it. I have very rarely used mine, although it has come in handy from time to time. I think, as you say in your email, it's probably just easier to take a few test shots, especially if you're using a digital, which I know you are. You're using the EOS 350D. So I hope that answers your question. You will find times to use it, but usually, you know, like you say, you're able to take some test photographs and even on your screen see the difference. For landscapes, you usually want to close it right down and put it on a tripod. For, you know, portraits, especially location portraits, you usually want to open it right up. So those are the two places I usually live. So I very rarely use my depth of field preview button. So I hope that helps you, Richard, and thank you very, very much for your question. I appreciate that, and I appreciate all the questions from our listeners. Just getting into today's subject, the formula is DI equals P plus K plus P plus E. I'll say that again. DI equals P plus K plus P plus E. Now, what is that formula? Well, DI stands for dynamic images. The first P stands for pre-visualization, something we've talked about on this podcast before. The K stands for knowledge. The second P stands for patience. And the E at the end stands for equipment. Let's put that together. And it reads this way: dynamic images equals pre-visualization plus knowledge plus patience plus equipment. Now, I've given an hour and a half lecture on this very subject, and I don't intend to speak for an hour and a half here, but I want you, between now and our next podcast, to think about this formula and my very brief rundown of it and apply it as much as you can in your daily or your weekly photography. Let's have a look at the first one, pre-visualization. Something that, as I said, we've discussed on this podcast before. And basically, pre-visualization is that image in your mind that you can't quite see clearly, but it is that image in the back of your head that is driving you to take a picture of wherever it is you are or whatever it is you're doing. That urge to create an image is usually stirred by something you've seen. It might not be as clear. It might not be as obvious as you think it is. It's lurking in the back of your mind in this context that you find yourself in. You can see it. Now you have to make sure that it happens. That's pre-visualization. There's an image lurking, floating around there in the clouds of your mind. You want to make that happen. Now, usually that pre-visualized image is quite dynamic. It's driving you to take a picture, which is why we're talking about dynamic images equals, and then this formula. You've got a picture in your mind that's just fabulous, and you want to make it happen. So the first point, the first part is recognizing that you have seen the image in your head. Something is driving you to take a picture. You've got to somehow key into what that picture is, what you've pre-visualized, and work through it, which brings us to the third part of our formula. But before you do that, you need knowledge. Now, what kind of knowledge do you need? Well, in order to make an image happen, every art has a science attached to it. In, you know, photography, of course, that science is an understanding of exposure, an understanding of lenses, depth of field, optics. Now, of course, there has to be an understanding of certain digital dynamics, limitations of film, the limitations of digital. All of those things are an aspect of the scientific or technological understanding of photography. You know, sculpture has its, woodworking has its. You know, they need to know the kinds of stones and the kinds of chisels and the kind of wood, and what different grains they have and how to work with grain and against grain. Photography, like every art, even music, has its own sciences. So you need to, you know, have a knowledge of those, a good working knowledge also of what makes a good photograph, compositionally, aesthetically, what it is that you need to do in this particular situation. What lens do you use? Do you require filters, a polarizer, a graduated filter, a neutral density filter, a warming filter, a diffusing filter? Do you need any of that? The pre-visualization part that we talked about also, if we take the next step to knowledge, will now be, now part of that question is, what am I going to do with this photograph afterwards? What I've pre-visualized, does it require me to then go into a photo editing suite like Photoshop and, you know, and work with the image there in order to achieve the result that I've seen in my head? So pre-visualization, we need the knowledge to understand how to make that image happen at a technological level, a scientific level, which leads to the creativity, and will mean that you'll need to ask yourself all sorts of questions, whether I compose vertically, horizontally, what lens, what aperture, what exposure, all those kinds of technical questions that, will change from context to context. Patience is the next part of this equation, and why patience? Well, as we said in the pre-visualization part, the image that you see in your mind lurks about in a fog and a cloud and is very rarely absolutely clear. I've had moments of epiphany where this image has been so clear and I've just walked up and I've done it, within a few frames. However, usually that's not the case. And I remember going to a lecture by someone that I respect very much, depending on how you look at it, of course, but Galen Rowell is the photographer I'm speaking of, who unfortunately died a few years ago in a very unfortunate plane crash. His work, if you go to mountainlight.com, is just some of the most beautiful nature and landscape work you will ever see. And Galen was an absolute gentleman. I went to one of his lectures once, and he was talking about these Joshua trees that he photographed at Yosemite. And he showed me the first picture. He showed us all in this demonstration that he put together. It was sort of like a PowerPoint presentation that he put together. The first photograph that he took, and he said it just wasn't it. It just wasn't what he saw in his mind. And then he took us through all of the frames that he took to get to the final image, which was a very much closer shot of a tree, and it was actually just the knotted branch of this tree against the sky. And he said, "This is what I saw, but it took me a long time to actually work it out. I took a photograph of the tree in its context, and no, it just wasn't it." But he'd seen this picture. He needed the patience to work that image through and take a step closer each time, work it out, take the picture. Is this what I see? No, it's not what I see. Until finally, he got the picture composed, which turned out to be a lot closer than he thought it would be, a lot tighter, with a lot less of the tree and a lot less of its context in the shot. But he told us all, he said, "This is what I saw, and I didn't know until I'd taken the picture." And then when I took it, especially, he said, when I saw the transparency on my light box, then I realized, yes, that was what I saw. But it took him time to work that through. And if we step back, it took him knowledge to work that through. It took him an understanding of the equipment that he had and, of course, the technical things that he needed to do to achieve that image. And previously, he needed, of course, to be in touch and work through what he had pre-visualized in his mind. The final step, the E part, the equipment part, is also very important. We talk about the fact that photographers take pictures, not cameras, and that's absolutely true. However, cameras are still very important parts of the picture-taking process, and we all strive to have quality equipment to the best of our ability, to the best of our budget, to the best of what we can justify in our lives. So a quality camera, of course, is a very important thing. But the other part of that, which involves lenses and an understanding of how they work, is a very, very important part of the E part, the equipment part. Because we all know, and this has been part of what I've been saying over the last few weeks, that lenses see the world differently. And the image that we've pre-visualized in our head may be a very wide and expansive image, or it may be a compressed, tight telephoto image. Sometimes we don't know that until we've put the camera on a tripod and tried different lenses or walked about with our zoom and worked with different, focal lengths. We don't honestly know that all the time. But if we don't have the equipment, if we don't have a quality camera, and we don't have particularly, I'm talking about, is the optics to achieve the effect that we see in our mind, then we're not going to get the photograph. It's very difficult, of course, for me to sit here and say that because, I have an array of lenses that I use to achieve almost anything. And not everybody can justify, the sort of expense that I can justify because this is my job. But within the budget that you have, that you can work with from year to year, try to make your array of lenses as versatile as possible and learn how they see. So that working backwards through this equation, you get to the pre-visualization part and you can look at that picture in your head and say, well, I'm going to need the widest angle lens that I've got. or I'm going to need the strongest telephoto lens that I've got, or I'm going to need the widest aperture on my telephoto lens that I've got, or the smallest aperture on my wide-angle lens that I've got, or whatever it might be, to make sure that the image that you see in your head is that which transpires as a photograph. The other part of course, of the equipment is a good tripod. I think every photographer should have a good, sturdy tripod, because working back through the equation again, that's a piece of equipment that helps you to be patient. You put the camera down, you work through your lenses, you work through your filters, you move the camera and the tripod around from place to place, changing your viewpoint, changing your heights, changing, you know, how you see where it is that you are. So a good tripod is necessary. And of course, even lighting equipment. If you are a studio photographer, you like doing portraits or still life, whatever lighting equipment you can use, portable flash equipment that you can use. Every good camera system now has amazing flash equipment that goes with it. And the difference that can make, which we discussed in our last podcast, it can be phenomenal if you understand how to use it. So this equation, albeit, you know, simplistic, has been the equation that I've used for creating, you know, the most, for my more successful images. And I use it subconsciously, I must admit, and writing the article that I did several years ago meant actually sitting down and working, you know, asking myself, well, how is it? What's the process that I go through to create a dynamic image? And I came up with this formula, which I mention again. It's DI, dynamic images, equals P, pre-visualization, plus K, knowledge, plus P again, patience, and E, equipment. That formula is the thing that I put very consciously now into my process when I'm taking time, and I request that you take as much time as you've got to take a photograph. When I'm taking time to take pictures, I actually consciously work through that formula to make my pictures happen. Some are more spontaneous than others, I've often said, but when I am working through an image, this is especially, say, landscapes or very serious portrait sessions where I've got time, that is what I do, and I find that it works. I'd like your comments, dear listeners, on that little formula, whether you think there's anything you'd like to add to it. I'd also like your comments to see whether you agree with it or whether you can go out, give it a try, and see whether it changes the way you take pictures. Let me know, because for me, this formula has worked. I know it worked for Prash Putita as well, and he's mentioned it in his editorials, and I hope it works for you also.
Fantastic. We are not worthy, Master.
Worthy, are you not?
Excellent. That's great.
And look, I again, thank you to everyone who has sent through the photographs in their endeavors to live up to my request for you to go out and test this. There's still time from our couple of podcasts ago about our lenses and perspectives. Still time. Let me know how you go. But I really do appreciate all your correspondence. And thank you again to all our listeners who ask me questions, and look forward to those answers.
Absolutely. And if you do want to email Shelton with any questions, it's just Shelton, Shelton, at audio2u.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back next week.
Looking forward to it. Thank you again to everyone.
Thanks, Shelton. See you, mate.
Thanks, Bruce. See you soon.
You've been listening to another Fresh Picked Pod from audio2u.com. Audio2u delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable.
You be the boss.
Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear it.
Hey, now that's a good idea.
Audio2u.com. Hit us today.
And remember,
Control D to bookmark.
Audio2u.com.